Hey everybody, it's Paul Scheer from How Did This Get Made? I wanted to let you know that we have a brand new website. It's hdtgminfo.com. You can find out everything that you need to know about How Did This Get Made on that site, where we're doing live shows, where to buy tickets, what the movies are. Everything and anything is there. And I want to let you know that we have shows coming up in New York and Denver and in some other places that we can't quite announce yet. So bookmark hdtgminfo.com. It's a buddy cop movie where one of the buddies is a mommy. We saw the Sylvester Stallone, Estelle Getty classic, Stop or My Mom Will Shoot, so you know what that means.
Now it's time for How Did This Get Made? We're gonna have a good time, celebrate some failure, not just be a hater, cause you know you wonder, how did this get made? Let's roll in the mediocrity of subpar art. Perhaps we'll find the answer to the question, how did this get made?
Hello, people of Earth, and welcome to another episode of How Did This Get Made? I am joined, as always, by my two amazing co-hosts, Jason Manzoukas.
What's happening?
And June Diane Raphael. How are you, June?
Good. How are you, Paul?
Very good. I am Paul Scheer, by the way. I never introduced myself. And we have a very special guest.
There's a lot
today.
Of people listening today who
Dude,
are like,
don't know.
Finally, I know!
So people like did comment on that. They're like, why don't you ever introduce yourself? I was like, you got it. You figured it out. I don't, like, you don't like accidentally stumble across a podcast. There's a lot of conscious steps taken.
I know who the other two are, but who's the guy talking?
For that five people who wanted to know, now you know. Mystery solved. We have a very special guest today. You might follow her on Twitter. Very funny, Kate Spencer. Welcome, Kate Spencer, to the show. She is, how are you, Kate?
I am great. I'm so glad to be here, you guys.
We're very excited to have you. This is our...
What's happening, Kate? You just had a baby.
I did. 4 weeks ago, I gave birth, and the first
four
movie...
Weeks ago?
Four weeks ago.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh,
it was
God.
Very yeah. soon. The first movie she saw was Stop or My Mom Will Shoot. She sat on my lap
yes.
and watched it with me last night.
Yeah. That's how I want to watch a movie.
She got
sitting
up
on a girl's
away.
Lap with a mouthful of tit.
Oh,
right, guys?
Man. Oh,
what?
Don't make it weird.
Right, guys? What?
Kate is our guest. Respect her.
That's right.
Respect her.
Just some popcorn and some boob juice.
Boob juice.
Boob juice.
Boob juice.
So I mentioned this in our
A little
mini,
bit of the boob juice.
There's a boob juice. Boob juice. I mentioned this in our mini episode. This is our Roger Ebert tribute episode here because Roger Ebert has called this movie the worst film he ever saw. Ever. And Roger Ebert, you could argue he's seen a lot of movies.
Yeah.
This was the worst.
That's pretty impressive.
Yeah. I found entertainment in this movie.
I did too.
But mostly from the point of view of like, what the fuck is happening?
Yeah. Well, that's exactly it. Like, to me, it's like more like indicative of a weird time and
yes.
like what was going on. Like, how was this brought to Sylvester Stallone? Like, okay.
Yeah.
It's a cop movie. But your partner is your mom.
Yeah.
I actually think there's a really like good movie in there and a really strong idea. It's just completely insane. Like the weirdest thing about this movie to me is the tonal shifts.
Yes.
There are several shots of Estelle Getty that make it seem as though this is a horror film. Does
really?
Anyone else agree?
There were moments,
really close-ups, where she was delivering lines very seriously, where it looked like this is a fucking scary movie.
Like misery-type scary movie?
Yes, about an obsessive mother. And I feel wow. weird and I feel scared.
June,
so I'm telling you, I felt scared.
June, this bit of interpretation is really fascinating. And I think might say more about you.
No, because then
than
we
about
would
the
jump
movie.
Out of it and it was a comedy again. But there were several moments where I was like, oh my God, this is spooky.
Would
like,
you
she's
argue?
Obsessive
did you scream?
And crazy. I didn't scream, but I didn't feel
safe?
No, I didn't. I really didn't.
Would you argue that maybe Estelle Getty was so good? The close-ups. There's a lot of close-up work
yeah,
in this movie.
Are.
A
yes.
lot of tight close-ups. And sometimes you would think they'd be punching in for, like, joke lines. But sometimes not so much. It's just...
See, I guess what I'm saying is when she would shift to her badass
yes.
cop
yeah,
mode,
yeah, yeah.
I had no history for where that was coming from. She wasn't... Like, all I got was that she was from Newark. And so I guess knew the streets a little bit. But it was, like, such a...
She's the Cory Booker of her day.
Right, but yes. it was such a drastic shift into, like... this badass mode that to me read as like, that's very scary.
Well, I'll tell you the moment that I felt really uncomfortable with in this movie. There's a moment, and it's a joke moment, but she cleans Sylvester's gun. And then
so we're just calling him Sylvester.
Oh yeah, Sylvester.
just
Sylvester.
Full name, but just the first name.
Exactly.
So Sylvester.
That's how
not
I'm doing
Sly.
It.
Not today. Sly. Not today. Not Sly.
Sylvester. When he does comedies,
I'm glad that's what we've chosen.
When he does comedies, he is Sylvester, the comedian. When he does action movies, he is Stallone.
He's very method like that.
She takes a gun, a loaded gun, and points it in his face.
I know. Yeah. I had the same thought.
And I was
but we learn it's not loaded.
Oh.
Because he takes the clip out and it's full of water.
Okay, but still.
And we did see her take out the bullets when she was in the laundry room. But it was still scary. I agree.
Was before that when she takes what is definitely a loaded gun and looks down the barrel of it.
That's what I'm saying. I was like, scary moments in this movie.
If this fucking woman shoots herself in the head right now, this movie is a classic.
Didn't it feel like weird? I'm going to totally be the downer, but like, there was a gun control message to this movie that felt very applicable to 2013.
Yes,
like, when she tried to buy the gun and there was a 2-week cooling off period, I was
Richard Schiff.
Wow.
Yes.
Richard Schiff tells her.
Yes.
I mean, like, I love those moments when somebody, like, that just is Toby from The West Wing to me. And he's in this for maybe 3 lines.
That's it.
But there's
love that shit.
Took you out of the reality of the movie.
I was like, hey, it's Richard Schiff. Yay. Remember when he was starting out and was
taking
jobs? Well,
the crazy thing about the gun.
Also, Ving Rhames.
Oh, yeah.
Also, yes. Ving Rhames' amazing cameo at the beginning.
Except not a cameo. It must have been just a job he had.
Yeah. Exactly. Just
it's fun. Really weird, though, that the gun she pretends to shoot him with was his personal gun, I guess. Like, because it wasn't a police department, you know,
government-issued gun.
The gun that she says, go ahead, make your bed.
And so that's his personal gun that he's keeping in his laundry hamper?
Yes.
Yes.
Do you think, are we supposed to understand that that's like the safe space for it? That's the
If you don't have a gun box, a locked gun box, you put it in a,
Everybody keeps it in a hamper.
It's soft, it's hidden.
Gotcha.
Yeah. No thief is going to go through your house and look through your hamper. Well, that, dirty clothes in there, like dirty underwear and stuff like that.
Like shit stains and stuff.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So like the presence of shit stains makes, well, let's be honest, makes the hamper the perfect hiding place for almost anything.
Yeah. All your money, your jewels, your gold bars.
Yep. Doubloons.
Yeah.
Treasure, basically.
Right.
Krugerrands.
Gotcha.
the bearer bonds.
I will say, though, you're right, the gun message of this movie is crazy because she can't buy a gun.
No.
And then she goes out and buys a gun illegally. And then there's a massacre from the guys who are selling guns. It's a really, like, I mean, if you were to take away the big jokes, it is very dark about gun control.
And a comical almost suicide at the beginning.
Oh, you're right.
A goofy guy who's like,
there's a lot of suicide stuff in this movie.
Much. What's interesting is that, like, I feel like this movie has Beverly Hills Cop was written for Sylvester. Beverly Hills Cop was written for Sylvester, and he turned it down, and Eddie Murphy made it.
Right.
And it became a huge hit. I think this movie was Sylvester's attempt to be like, oh, shit, I blew it with that movie.
Right.
And so, because I felt like there were elements of this that were similar to, you know, because Beverly Hills Cop has tons of murders, the stakes of it are really high. I feel like they were trying to inject that into this, but it doesn't work here
at all. Yeah, because the action scenes are really big action scenes. Like, he literally at the end of the movie is chasing an airplane with like a Mack truck.
Yeah.
And it's like,
and ramming it. Like ramming an airplane.
Yeah. And you would see that in a Sylvester Stallone movie, but then it's all of a sudden like his mom's running around with her big purse and her little dog.
Oh my God.
So it's intermixed with tonally, this movie didn't know where it was.
So confused.
I will point out one thing. I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No.
The Estelle Getty did not want to use a gun. She said when Estelle Getty found out that the filming of the movie would involve guns, she said she would only do the movie if there were no guns in it. The producers lied to her and told her that there would be no guns in the movie to get her to sign on. And then when the movie came on, they gave her guns. But I don't understand that because the movie is called
Stop or My Mom
Will
Shoot.
So when did she find out that there were guns in it?
I have no idea. I hope
not only that, but like,
it's
the titular line is in the movie.
Yes.
He says out loud, stop or my mom will shoot.
Maybe Estelle Getty I don't know. That was a bold power play. Like, I'll do this movie as long as you take away the central conceit.
I just found her character to be, like, completely... Like, there's another version of this movie where we would understand, and I guess we were to understand that she really needed his love because she was alone and she didn't have a husband and the father died. But it, to me, she seemed so unlovable.
Yeah. Well, she's unreasonable.
She didn't love her.
She's a terrible listener. She will not listen to anything anyone says.
Right, but I can't believe I'm going to reference this movie, but Jack and Jill does a really good job of making Jill.
June?
No, I like
June,
that movie.
Can I talk to you for a second? Can I talk to you for a second
Jill,
over here?
Yeah, sure.
June, what are you doing right now?
I'm so excited to get June's thesis on Jack and Jill on the podcast. Well, many people have asked about it. Here you go.
I love Jack and Jill.
Of course you do.
And Jill is played so lovably, and we understand why. Yes, she's crazy. Yes, she's way too needy, but I love her, and I think Jack should give her a shot. Whereas in this movie, when he says to his mom at the end, you know, I want you to stay.
Yeah.
In my mind, I'm thinking, no, she's been here way too long. Like, let her go.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
I have no, did you, I guess what I'm asking is, did you want to see the two of them together?
Did we want him to end mother? Up with his mom?
I want.
At the end of this
there was a moment where I wanted them to have sex. There was a moment where I was like, the only way to cut this tension is a pretty... What is up with the scene where he, like, sticks his butt out in the air?
Can we talk about that?
Can we talk about that?
Yes, where he
wears... I can't believe I just got myself there by imagining them having sex.
It would be a good
session. Because you want to see him have sex with a white t-shirt and black tighty whities.
In child's pose. I was like, what is he doing right now?
It was like a presentation.
He was like, he was presenting. He was really presenting.
Yeah, it was a gift.
Yeah. He also presents his ass in the shower scene, too.
Yeah.
He's like, Mom, get out of here. And she's like, oh, I haven't seen anything that you don't have. And it's
she has some line where she's like, I may be your mother, and I think it's in a shower scene, but I'm still a woman.
No.
That's when she's talking to Gwen.
Yeah, she's talking to Gwen,
about the size of his penis.
Yeah. She appreciates his cock size because she's still a woman, even though.
And she, but wait, the way it comes up is she's showing Gwen. JoBeth Williams, JBW.
JBW.
She's showing JBW pictures of him as a baby. And she says, look at him in this one. He's playing in the sandbox or whatever. And all the muscles, even though he's 9 years old, all the muscles. And you can tell he's gonna have a big unit.
Yeah.
It's like, right? Isn't that roughly that. I'm pretty sure she says a big unit.
But when she says, I can appreciate that as a woman,
I was kind of like, right on.
You were?
I didn't like that.
I think she's saying, you know, I don't think she means her son's dick, but she's just like, hey, listen.
What else should she mean?
We all love big dicks.
I understand. You're right. What she means is I'm happy for you, Joe.
Yeah.
You're getting loud.
I'm happy for you. I guess that's really the problem I have with the movie is I felt like it's incredibly misogynistic.
Well.
First of all, the fact that
the woman was a boss.
And yet she's so obsessed with him.
Yeah, and she's such a terrible lieutenant. I mean, she's horrible at her job.
And she wears awful shirts.
But that's probably because she's a woman and she was promoted above the men in an effort to be equal, rights for women.
No, you're absolutely
so
right.
So she was promoted even though she didn't deserve it because women can't do police work. We all understand
that.
Here's what was fucked up about it is that she really, like, she comes across as also wanting to mother him, but he's also... He's in a sexual relationship with her, but she has these moments where she's like, your toothbrush with the frogs on
it.
What
was that about?
See, that's what I think that was about.
What was that about?
Like, he felt that this mothering energy that was smothering him.
But that was his nightmare. Remember his nightmare?
Oh, and the diaper.
His nightmare was his diaper, and the mother's like, let me change you. You cut over to JBW, and she goes, let me change you.
Yeah.
So he saw JBW as a mother figure, and also changing him as a person.
Yeah, exactly.
He didn't.
Double meaning there.
That's the kind of levels that you're getting on this movie.
That's right.
If you're wondering if there's a scene in which Sylvester is in a diaper and needs a change in, there is.
And that's very much in the vein of Beverly Hills Cop. So the thing I want to talk about too is the emotional scene between JBW and Estelle Getty where. Estelle Getty kind of reveals the backstory why Sylvester is the way he is, and that's because his father died, and Estelle Getty had a bad couple of days. It was so small. It was like, for a couple of days, I couldn't do anything.
It's like, yeah, of course not.
Yes, acceptable.
Yeah. Your husband just passed away. You would have a couple
of
days.
You've got a long road of grief ahead of you, actually.
She was almost like, for a long weekend, I was a little messed up, and he really stepped in.
Yeah.
And then this became this like really emotional scene, which felt incredibly out of place for this movie.
100%.
Well, but then it was turned on its head because there was a joke at the very end where he came in and they were both crying hysterically. And that was like played as a joke.
Yes. Okay, but wait. Okay, so this scene is something that I was so mystified by because she puts into play this idea that his biggest problem is that he's never cried over the death of his father. She says he never cried, and you know what? He's never cried since that day, and I think that's why he's afraid to let people in. And I was like, oh, so at the end of the movie, he's going to cry, and he and Joe Beth Williams will be able to be together. Nope. Never cries.
No, and instead he just recites to JBW what his mom said.
Yes,
like
yes.
He never actually makes a transition into a man who wants to be with it. He just kind of does not have free will.
No.
But by the way,
that's what I'm saying. What is the lesson in this movie? Truly, what are we to take away from it?
I mean, clearly, three men wrote it, right? So Blake Snyder and two other men.
Well, we got to talk about this Blake Snyder thing. Well, continue with this thought because I want to.
There's like layers of mommy issues in this movie, right?
Sure.
Like it's such a reflection of the guys who wrote it.
Well,
being so screwed up with their mothers.
Well, and also I have to say, like, it also reeks to me of that late 80s, early 90s fear of women bosses where it's like, well, I guess I better fuck them because I'm not going to take an order from, like, it's just so, there's so much fear in this movie of women and what they're going to do.
Well, there was also a weird moment in the beginning, which I think I have a clip of, but I think it'd be better even to describe it, when the mom is showing the stewardesses like pictures of him as a baby.
Oh, my God.
One of the women. Should I play it? I have it.
Do you have it?
Yeah, I do have it.
Please all right. Play this.
All right, here we go.
I've given up shaving.
No, I shave.
Hi, Titty.
So this is little Joey, huh?
Looks a lot different in clothes.
We've got to be getting along now, Titty, but thanks a lot for showing us the photos. You know, you look real sexy in those diapers.
Breakfast!
Okay, there we go.
Okay.
Let's pause right there. You looked real sexy in those diapers. So this airline stewardess is fetishizing a three-year-old, an infant?
An infant. Diapers.
They all are. Yeah, you're right. They all are.
All objectified him on their way off the plane.
Yeah.
Like, they got done working, a man they had never met before, and then they basically...
Who they saw baby pictures of and are now apparently just wet for him.
But also, how did they recognize him off his baby pic?
Because his he's
talking to Tootie.
Oh, right.
He's talking to Estelle Getty. Estelle Getty
Before, I'm telling you, before Estelle Getty comes out, there are a bunch of stewardesses who notice him. And give him like.
All right, because what did the first guy say when we got off the plane? He's like, I was a bedwetter too.
Yeah,
I was a bedwetter too.
How did they know him?
I would argue Estelle Getty has pictures all throughout his life.
Yeah, that's what I would guess too. Yeah. She probably has adult pictures of him as well.
But that was a creepy ass line.
Oh, like, you look real sexy. And she comes in close and says it to him like real fucking pervy.
And by the way,
I was into it.
And we haven't really talked about it, but if you just think back to that music, we can actually play a clip of it. This is the music that underscores everything.
That music and what we just heard was so crazy.
Here's just a little taste of it more just so you can really hear it without dialogue. So picture this for 87 minutes.
It never stops. People being murdered.
Yeah, people are being murdered.
To this music. Or to a faster version of this music.
It's like a bad Disneyland jazz band throughout the entire movie. It's like...
It's the soundtrack to like a lesser Woody Allen movie. You know, like I kind of am like, oh, am I watching? What's it called? The terrible. I don't know why I can only think
Manhattan
of
Murder Mystery.
Oh my God, that's what. No, I was gonna say the Helen Hunt one.
Oh, As Good As It Gets?
No.
Curse of the Jade Scorpion.
Thank you.
Oh, wow.
Curse of the Jade Scorpion.
That was a real deep one.
Well done.
B-side.
That is a terrible Woody Allen movie.
Yeah, it's his worst. I would say it's
his
worst.
I would argue it's his worst.
Yeah. What's the one with the guy from Deadwood and where it's about magic? Or is that the terrible one, too?
Oh, and Hugh Jackman?
Yeah. Well, the one where he's going
Scarlett
blind.
Scarlett Johansson and Hugh Jackman?
Yeah, that one. That one's pretty bad, and the one where
What's
he's going
called,
blind,
like, mischief
too.
Mischief or something?
Well, I have not seen you guys.
Oh, that's a terrible
one. There was like a period of 3 years where Woody Allen just put out, like, It was like, oh, okay, I can top that being worse. Here's one where I'm a director that goes blind, and he's like bumping into walls. And then he all of a sudden got back on track.
Blind, though, is a motif. I mean, in Crimes and Misdemeanors.
Sure, it was not pulled off, though, well.
Yeah.
And the
I love that we just turned this into an episode of How Did This Get Made about Woody Allen.
Yeah.
We should get it. We should do that. Like, we should take the bad Woody Allen movie.
That would be pretty funny.
I hear what you were saying, though, about wanting. So one would think that there would be a moment where he starts crying. I do think that
there has to be. That's what it was set up for.
Yes. I think what they were going for, and I don't know if this is because Sylvester wasn't able to muster up the tears.
I think Sylvester Stallone, sorry to interrupt you, does not want to cry on film.
Okay.
Has he ever?
Because I was going to say, I think it could have been written in the moment where he's staring at the photograph. Which, by the way, at one point in the movie, he simply pulls out a photograph of Jo Beth Williams and stares at it and talks to it.
Oh, in the frame?
He talks to himself.
Yes.
He talks to himself all the time in this movie.
Well, but he has a frame of Jo Beth Williams in his office where her office is only feet away.
Yeah.
He goes to the office to talk to this picture. She's still at work. And he is basically
right, because even when they were together, if he wanted to think of her or whatever, he could just simply look up because she's...
And also, she's his boss. You can't have a framed picture of her on your desk.
It's really fucked up.
When was that picture ever on his desk?
When they were together.
Really?
Did they really break up? I don't know.
I have to say that's the big flaw in the movie, too, is that they have no chemistry.
None.
Like, every time they're on screen together, it's like these people hate each other.
Can we talk about her and leading ladies of the 90s movies?
Yeah.
Oh,
sure.
My God. Yeah.
I want to. Let's fucking get into it. Bonnie Bedelia. Go. Ann Archer. Go.
Ann Archer's amazing.
Break it. Elizabeth Perkins.
Who is the woman?
Go.
Gina Davis.
Yes.
Gina Davis.
Which is who I thought that was for a hot minute when she walked in. That big boofy hair. She could not be any less attractive. Is this a horror? Adding to the misogyny of the movie is my take that she looks like she's a 70-year-old woman.
Yeah, well, she is not dressed. They don't play up her sexuality at all.
Right. It's not Joe. Which is
good because she's in the workplace, guys, and girls don't have to sex it up to be the lieutenant of the police department. Okay.
You alternatively
said that women shouldn't be in leadership positions.
Oh, come on, get this. I mean, I was only mad this dumb slut didn't pull her tits out.
There's one scene, and you'd have to go and watch it, but it's a scene where he is getting drunk and talking to her picture where I felt like they were running late in their day. They're like, oh shit, we're going to go over our 12 hours. Get Jo Beth out of the trailer. Well, she has no makeup on. I don't care. Shoot her side
of the
scene.
The thing.
She looks good throughout, but then there's this one scene where she is makeupless. Like, I swear to God, it was only on her clothes. It was like, we gotta go. We gotta go. No touch ups.
What they were establishing is that she's in jeans. It's after hours.
Yeah.
This is the dress
this
down.
This is her, like, exactly.
I agree with you, but I think the weird thing about the way her character comes off is it doesn't feel like, and this has nothing to do with her being a lieutenant.
Wait, after hours, she hangs out at the job?
Yeah, she changes.
She said she came in just to get some stuff.
Oh.
Yeah. So it does feel like she's a divorced woman with two kids.
Wait, does that
really? Oh, I love that.
No, what I'm saying is that's what it felt like to me. Not
will you
that
write
she...
a movie that is the Rosencrantz and Guildenstern of this movie, where it's an entire movie that
about
Lieutenant Gwen Harper, her divorce, her two kids, and it ends with her meeting Sylvester Stallone for the first time.
It didn't feel to me like she was looking for a husband. The energy that was coming off of her was like
desperate craziness.
I've lived. I'm looking for something to work here. Like, it just felt so depressed.
She did seem built, like, she didn't seem like she was a young woman about town. She seemed like she was beat down.
But let me ask you, how old do you think she is in this movie? How old is this character?
I mean, I would say, I feel like they're both in their 40s, right?
Yeah. I'm curious how old Jo Beth, I
can tell you.
She looks like it. Like, I feel like the way they dress her, the way they do her makeup, the way everything about if you were like when she shot this movie, she was 32 years old, I'd be like, I bet she was.
I bet she was.
She probably was. And also when at the beginning where they're talking about their trip to Catalina and all the sexy things he did, none of those sexy things happened, right?
No.
Like they went to Catalina and just laid in a bed together.
They actually laid in two separate beds across her.
And he presented his ass to her. I would believe if she fucked him for the weekend in Catalina.
Strapped it on.
He got into that position he loved.
She like pulled those down and she just went to town on him.
Shot was crazy. I'm thinking about it again.
That shot is mental. He is so crazy. He is puts his ass in the air like he's presenting it
like
for
a bonobo gorilla. He is giving his ass to her.
It is
for
the,
someone to eat out.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. If you put it that way, yes, exactly.
He's like wagging it around, being like, "Hey, anybody want to see what's up over here?"
But then he snuggled. Did you notice also how he snuggled into the bed, fetal position, like in a very passive way.
He's a very sad character, by the way.
In his apartment.
Okay, I really want to talk about the art direction of this movie.
44. Okay, wait a minute.
Wait, 44. I just want to let everyone know, Joe Beth Williams, 44 when this movie was shot.
Wow. Oh, okay. Okay.
Sorry.
That's fine.
She does, I think.
Wait, are we going to talk about the gumball machine?
I want to talk about the jack-o'-lantern.
Jack-o'-lantern.
Yep. Just I think the jack-o'-lantern was a cookie jar. I'm almost positive. The jack-o'-lantern was a cookie jar.
Okay, so it wasn't Halloween. After I saw it, I was like, "Oh, I guess it's Halloween, and this is going to somehow tie in." I don't know how. But like,
I love that you're looking for clues, though.
I did.
Wait, Kate Spencer, did you just do a spit take?
Okay, then there's another shot. Another prop I really want to talk about is when he's lying in bed. I saw it in the ass shot. There's a little lamp that's hanging over his bed that has two socks hanging off of it.
He's a dude.
But why put your socks up there?
Oh my god!
Because he's a dude. He's just getting home. He's putting his socks on a lamp, drying them out.
But just
oh my god, it's the
he's gonna wear the socks tomorrow. Yeah, I have to wear socks just for one.
In a line, when you're introduced to his apartment, on the table behind him is a bathtub rubber ducky. Literally, these are decorations. A bathtub rubber ducky. Why? A gumball machine.
This is in the kitchen. This is like a countertop.
Gumball machine and a jack-o'-lantern cookie jar.
Giant glass jack-o'-lantern.
He shares the frame with all of those items. Like,
is not indicative of anything of his character.
Not at all.
Like, his character is not like not a fun-loving guy. No. Like,
doesn't eat a cookie once.
If I saw those three things, I would be like, a child molester lives here. all of these things are for children.
Wait a second. Maybe that's what he does. That's why he's into Joe Beth Williams. He's molesting children. He's bringing children into his house to molest.
Maybe. I could argue. Okay, I'm now going to argue why it's happening. And this also explains some of his behavior, is that he is like still a child.
He's stunted, blah, blah, blah,
because of his mom, blah, blah, blah. So they were like, that means like, let's put kid-like stuff around the apartment.
Oh.
You know what I mean? Like, let's decorate.
The deer head on the wall.
Because
he's not a hunter.
Yeah.
It's never acknowledged.
Oh, well, by the way, I don't even understand what kind of cop he is, because in the beginning, you would assume he was a good cop. He did this, he busted, like he beat down Ving Rhames. He saved all the Panasonic TVs. But then like one detective comes and is like, "Hey, Detective Alka-Seltzer."
What was that about?
I have no idea what that means. And then they're like, and then he's, you know, just kind of saying, like, "Yeah, you're a bad cop." I'm like, is he? We've only seen him
excel at police.
Yeah, because they established too that he's just a sergeant, and his mom is like, "You're never going to move up," and that sergeant's not a high position. But then he's the one who goes in and rescues the suicide jumper.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like,
I think I think the other people in the force in that precinct are very upset that he's having an affair with the boss. And that's why I think that guy's upset. Because if you look, all of their scenes, Sylvester and JBW's scenes in the office, behind them through those blinds.
Right.
Yeah.
People are watching and looking and reacting.
Oh my God, guys, we have not talked about the extras in this movie.
They're amazing.
The extras in this movie are nonstop amazing. The people that fill out the rest of the police station are hilarious. At a certain point, when Sylvester and Estelle Getty get into a fight on the street, Sylvester's on the street, the mom is in the doorway of his house, it's nighttime. Upwards of 20 bystanders just appear to watch them fight.
That's right.
People are hanging out of windows. People are like, and it is, all of them are so animated and are overacting so much. Like, one of them is like, she's right. Like, it is crazy.
Well, that's a running theme of the movie, is that anytime, like, the outside public hears that Sylvester has problems with his mom, they all feel collectively that he's in the wrong and she's in the right.
The best version of that is when he's trying to save his mom from going to the airport. They frame a shot where his mom is like on the back of a golf cart driving through an airport lounge, and he's having this dramatic scene with his mom, and the guy driving the golf cart is like, he's so center frame. Yeah. It's awkward, but he's got to react. Like, you could clearly tell her, yeah, just pick a sign. He's like, but she's like, you don't like me. He's like, yeah, yeah. Like, it's a funny scene. You should watch. I can't describe it more
the
than
more
it's
think
such
about
an awkward expert replacement. They should have just moved it off the golf cart for a second.
Yeah, or just had that guy get off and, like, move luggage
exactly.
or something
right.
so that he's out of the shot.
Don't frame it as a three shot when one of the people is a non-established extra.
Can I this has been bothering me for 24 hours. The criminal who has a cold, and that the cold is a running theme throughout the whole movie.
Or it's
so
allergies.
He can just have the sneeze that then shows them that he's there in the locked
It's a long
closet.
Way to go for that sneeze.
It was
and by the
way,
that
sneeze,
long way to go.
That sneeze is worthless. Like,
doesn't
they are on
anywhere.
The trail anyway.
Yeah.
Like,
right.
The sneeze doesn't prove anything. The sneeze is...
Although there was an amazing moment where the boss man said, when his two henchmen...
Worst one
who,
villain
one
of
who
all
has
time.
A, who has a cold, when Estelle Getty and Sylvester are about to show up, he needs them to hide somewhere, and he says, go into the side office. Side
Everyone
office.
Has one.
Of course.
What's a side office?
What was his deal?
That villain was so bad. I feel like the sneeze brings us back to an idea that we have to definitely talk about, which is one of the writers of this movie.
I can't.
Is Blake Snyder. Now, Blake Snyder has made a R.I.P., God rest his soul, has made his career.
He's dead?
Yeah,
he's dead.
He died a few years ago.
Oh,
yeah.
I didn't know that.
Writing a book called Save the Cat. Save the Cat has like become like the new kind of go-to how you write a movie book.
Yeah.
Like, and I would say, first of all, I was looking for a Save the Cat moment. We were talking about this before we started.
Which is a Save the Cat moment is a moment normally at the beginning of the movie which endears you to
that's saying there's no lovability in either of them, I don't think.
I think it didn't come until you find out he planned his father's funeral when he was 13 years old.
Yeah.
That was the only moment where I was like, oh, he's okay.
Well, in my mind, I thought the Save the Cat moment was when he shot at that sign and it fell down on the crooks. Like, I was like, okay.
Like an A-Team episode?
Yeah.
Do you realize there are two occasions in this movie where he shoots a chain?
Yes.
He shoots a chain and it breaks. That sign and then the wrecking ball.
Yeah.
Like, that's
yeah.
how good he is. He can shoot a chain and it will break.
But you see, like, to me, this is like the sweaty stuff of Save the Cat. Like, the sneeze thing goes back to, like, we'll establish a game, and that game will undo the final thing. And also, like, the first and the last shot, like, in the first scene of the movie, Sylvester Stallone, like, shoots a sign down and then literally pulls the gun up to his mouth and blows it like you would do as a kid playing, like, guns, you know, like, and, you know, like, whatever, he says a line. And at the end of the movie, Estelle Getty shoots somebody, blows the smoke.
I guess shoots him in the shoulder. She's a shitty shot. That's what infuriated me. She didn't even kill the bad guy.
No, she. Yeah.
See, the problem with the movie also is that one would think that it would be her. What irritates him about her, you know, should somehow help him in the end get the bad guy, or the kooky ways in which she is and her personality should ultimately come back and help save the day. What happens in the movie is just she knocks people over the head with pans and then shoots them. Like, there's no skill that's used
in an interesting way. I would like this movie where Sylvester Stallone's mom is coming in, but also the bad guy's mom is also coming in, and they have dueling
moms. By the way,
that would actually be great.
Great.
That would be great.
Movie. I would have liked it only if Jackie Stallone had played Sylvester, if his real mother had played. Have you ever heard her on, like,
oh my
she
God.
Would come, she used to come on Howard Stern. She's like a so-called lunatic.
Like, insane. That was like when back again in the 90s, like, moms are crazy too. Scott Baio had a crazy mom who was always on things too.
Yeah, now nobody's mom is crazy. Dina Lohan.
Burn.
What happened to Amanda Bynes' mom? I want to find out.
What is going on with Amanda Bynes?
Amanda Bynes.
Thanks for tuning in. If you just tuning in, thanks for tuning in to How Did This Get Bynes? What is going on? Somebody, like, she's having an episode or something.
Oh, she's worse than Lindsay. She's way worse than Lindsay, but it's not as sensational as Lindsay.
And a better actor than Lindsay Lohan, I would argue.
Really?
She played a boy once.
Lindsay Lohan
in Parenthood.
Classic.
And Mean Girls, I thought she was good. And I mean, she's been very
and
good.
Freaky Friday.
Guys, put it all on the shelf. Sydney White and the Seven Dorks. That is quality acting. That is an Amanda Bynes classic. I believe that is Sydney White, definitely is what it is called.
And the Seven Dorks? Is that really what it's called?
I'm pretty positive. I'm going to check it out right now. And am I right? Oh, it's just called Sydney White. No Seven Dorks.
The movie is a bummer, though, because you sort of have this feeling at the end where even if he does get rid of her, he's saddled with this other mother figure.
Yeah. Like,
there's
just
such a depressed life view about women and their role in a man's life. It was such a bummer.
And he didn't want to be with her anyway.
No, there was no like.
She didn't represent anything that we saw. Except for him staring at a picture frame.
Well, he genuinely
that he liked her at all.
Because even when he's staring at the picture frame.
Yeah.
And then when she comes up, all he manages to say is exactly what his mother has already said.
And
so he's copying his mom's words. So
and then he reveals it like a real dummy.
Here, I know I say this a lot on the show. He is definitively on the autism spectrum.
He
does not understand the correct emotions for the moment.
Oh, you're 100% right, because you know what? In the beginning of the movie, when he's on the phone, he's counting the rings.
Yeah.
He's like, 71, 72. Okay, that's a crazy move. You're counting the rings.
I think he might be Asperger's. Or something like there is not really, but I mean, like, there is something really kind of crazy about his
because he did eat all that breakfast too. Like, what human way they go, like, when his partner, also the worst partner of all time because he's
glass
butt,
Tony.
But sometimes they say he was shot in the bus, he was shot. They're like, oh, your partner got shot, but it was very clear that he had glass in his ass.
He thought he was shot,
inconsistent.
Yeah, he thought he was shot, and then Sylvester pulled a shard of glass out of his ass.
He was a terrible cop. No wonder his mom was a better partner.
I fully believe everybody was a terrible cop. Every single crime scene Sylvester arrived on, he inexplicably immediately became the lead detective
on the scene. And walks through without any hesitation. And he's always in civilian clothes. So there's nothing to determine that he is a cop.
And there was like, they came across a guy who was going to jump out of a building, a bank robbery in process. Oh, no, that was the dream sequence.
The woman who had been kidnapped in the house with a weed poster.
Oh, right. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. You know those people are bad because they framed a poster of weed.
And he had a weed. That guy, the fat criminal, had a weed pin on his vest.
Oh, my God.
So that's how you established that was his house.
By the way.
The other crazy moment, and one of the more upsetting scenes to me, was when Sylvester and the criminal are sitting down at a table drinking chocolate milk that Estelle Getty has served to them. And she walks out, and then they both look at each other, and they're talking for a while, and they have chocolate milk all over their mouths.
Again, a classic Beverly Hills Cop move.
Yep.
They have a very moment.
Do you think that maybe they were, like, eating each other's asses out?
Do you think that's
the subtext of that scene?
I mean, I would hope. If Blake Snyder wrote it, I would hope that's what we were going for.
Like, really I know I keep on saying the movie's misogynistic, which it is, but it also, to me, is, like, a very sad portrayal of men, because the takeaway is like, men are also very young boys.
Yeah, all men are boys.
All men need to be mothered.
All women are mommies.
And all women are nannies.
It was
come and change my die-die.
Also, they never address the fact that Estelle Getty is a terrible person because she withholds evidence in a murder case.
Oh, yes.
So she, like, does not want to help solve a crime, just wants to help her. Like, that's sociopathic, isn't
it? I now believe that you are right, June, and that this is a Misery-style sociopath
raising her autistic son movie. Yeah, no. You feel like this, you feel what she needs out of him. Again, much like, you know, not like Jack and Jill, where you actually do feel for
all right, Jack and Jill.
Here we go.
I actually want to. We should
do
an episode
where
let's actually just play one of the scenes where Sylvester is very upset with his mom, he tells the Joe Beth Williams. This is with Sylvester and his girlfriend. Just to hear like where he's frustrated, because I think this is a good little scene here.
I'm Gwen. She's supposed to go back Monday.
That was before she witnessed a drive-by killing.
Well, can we fly her back?
Now you're being ridiculous.
Come on, Gwen. If she stays past Monday, I swear to God, I'm killing myself.
What is wrong with you, Joe? Tootie seems like a wonderful person. Warm, caring, obviously crazy.
Yeah, crazy is right. She acts like I'm in second grade, bitch. She talks to total strangers about my diaper rash. She just humiliates me.
I'd say she loves you, Joe.
Well, her love is driving me nuts.
Well, either way, she's staying.
There we go. Again, the most shoehorned plot device. She's got to stay with you because she's a...
And there's another suicide reference. That's three. And this light this is a dark movie.
I know
I would like
Sylvester.
To put it out to our audience to cut a trailer for this movie that makes it seem like a horror movie.
That would be amazing.
You could easily do it.
Yeah, easy. There's so many shots of her that are spooky.
And if you change the music from like clown car music
yep.
to actual scary music.
Oh my gosh.
He talks like he has a muffin in his mouth.
All the time.
All the time. And I know that's his thing, but it's in that scene, he's holding a dog, and I couldn't understand anything he was saying.
He is talking at times so slowly in scenes. It's as if he's never spoken the words before.
And you know what? When we were talking about the props, I actually thought to myself, I think the eye had to go to the props and to the surrounding
yes.
because the scene was so long and he was yes. talking so
and
slowly.
It is like when he's opening his mouth to talk, it is like a black hole opens and I don't care what any of it's and nothing happens.
But for someone who can't talk, he has a lot of monologues in this movie.
But for someone who can't talk, you shouldn't be doing a comedy because that would be where the majority of the movie would be.
How about the I'll be back joke?
Oh, yeah.
There were a
How
few
weird
pop
was
culture
that?
References yeah. in this movie that were
but
so
like
out of
she,
place.
His, Estelle Getty says, I'll be back. And he's like, why'd you say that? And I'm like, what is this like a is this like him taunting Arnold from within his own movie?
Yes.
Because at the time they were like the two big dogs, you know?
And this came out the year that Terminator 2 came out.
Oh, really?
This is why I watched this movie and it was, I can't, like 1992 was not a terrible year. Like this movie felt more, if I watched it in 92, it would have felt 20 years old.
Well, that's what I feel like. I feel like it feels like,
it
feels like if you said this was like, it felt like it should have been an early 80s movie or something.
Yeah.
But this is also
the title and everything is very like, Honey, I Shrunk the Kids. Like,
you know, go ahead.
It just felt like that. Like here's a really, you know, the fact that the title's called Don't Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
Or Stop or My Mom Will Shoot.
Don't forget, Don't Throw Mama from the Train.
Yes, that's where I get
But you see,
right,
but
right,
now,
right.
But here's the other one. And I just checked
Or Throw Mama from the Train.
Do you remember this movie?
Throw Mama from the Train.
Cop and a Half, which was, Cop and a Half was Burt Reynolds paired up with a very young, tiny kid. So his partner was a little kid. And that was like his partner.
Well, this
and
is
also
like
Turner and Hooch, right?
Yep.
Which is a cop.
Oh
and a
yes,
dog.
Turner and Hooch,
and
K-9.
Yeah,
like there is when I finished the movie on Netflix, all of the recommended movies because I'd just watched it was like a cavalcade of disastrous movies from this exact same.
Well, people
era.
Are like buddy cop movies are popular. Let's subvert it in some way. Let's take a quick break, and we will come right back. I do want to talk about one thing here. About his clothes. Clearly, I think Sylvester Stallone, while shooting the movie, had like a chain. Like, first of all, his pants are always up, way too high.
He's wearing high waisted jeans, basically.
Yes.
Yes.
Which I guess that's just what jeans were then.
I think so.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All jeans were like that.
But the shirts, like, there was a shirt problem throughout the whole movie, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I felt like in the middle of the movie, he changed to Hawaiian shirts
Hawaiian shirts, just like very. Patterny shirt.
It's like Bill Cosby had like shirts instead of sweaters. This would be what he was
like. Like the costume designer from The Cosby Show was on hiatus from The Cosby Show and came over and did this movie.
I
actually felt like there was a vision for his character in terms of the way he looked that was more boyish and more in line with the ducks and the jack-o'-lantern and stuff. And I was feeling like he refused to wear that stuff. And so he wore these kind of tight t-shirts and jeans.
Corduroy jackets.
Yeah, like it felt like, well, this tells me nothing about your character. Like, I'd have no idea what I'm watching here.
But I will say, J.B. Dubs was impeccably dressed in some power suits.
Oh, she was rocking it out.
She really set that up.
God.
I liked it.
Come a long way.
I liked it but her red hair. There was a lot. But now that you say she was 44 in it, I get it. That makes more sense.
What about the final line of the movie? Estelle Getty, you know, notices somebody she saw in America's Most Wanted.
Oh my God.
On the screen. Sylvester Stallone chases it down again, becomes the lead cop because another cop just hands him his handcuffs.
Why is that guy at the airport with a gun?
Yeah, no reason.
No reason.
What I
just
mean?
Just to shoot at things.
What the. She
and he
coincidentally.
Had killed his mom. He had killed his mother.
Wait, like he says, she goes, I remember what he did. He killed his mother. Slow close up onto Sylvester Stallone. Weird smile. and freeze. That's the end of the movie. End.
Freeze frame.
Well, I thought what happened, maybe I'm wrong, is that he sort of shared a look with the guy.
Right.
Of like, I get it.
Yeah.
And then freeze frame.
I thought he didn't share a look with the guy. I thought he was looking at his mom like, can you blame him?
That's what I thought. That's exactly what
Jesus.
I thought.
Because I'd like to put a bullet in you. It was basically the subtext of that. She, in the, whatever, 3 weeks that she is in Los Angeles, witnesses a drive-by murder. She happens upon so much chaos and craziness that it's unfazed.
Although
she's unfazed.
Say,
someone is shot to death in front of her, and she's just kind of like,
she walks away.
Yeah.
But I have to say, this was, watching the movie, I'm like, wow, this was my image of LA at that time, like with drive-bys and stuff. Like, I was like, oh, I guess that's what Los Angeles
Trucks
is.
Of guns.
Wait,
yeah.
So this movie just proved to you the truth?
This is a documentary, right? Wait, what?
This is like an Errol Morris film.
Wait, what?
I mean, by the way, I we talked about it very briefly, but the bad guy is so terrible in this. Roger Reese, who I think was like the love interest on Cheers.
Right.
And but he was like, I don't even know. I don't actually even understand what the plot.
I don't
like the.
I don't know what his business was.
No plot, and they solve it like they sit at a picnic table outside and look at documents and figure out what the mystery is. So she never helps. Actually, like you were saying, with her like wacky mom ways. Like a pineapple
they
jar.
They don't tie in. Those aren't going
to
come back.
They never come back.
Don't
Although she
them.
Did make a cake.
Yeah.
She made it with pineapple, all those pineapples.
Yeah.
Oh,
I
boy.
Laughed when she opened that suitcase. That gave me a chuckle. Because
to me, that's something that's what's so weird about the fact that Blake Snyder wrote this is that those things, those tropes of like using all of her games to come back and help save the day, it doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be a good movie, but it was sort of shocking to know like, oh, that's not even.
Yeah. Well, here's
not there,
a, like,
no.
I mean, I would argue that you could not describe Sylvester Stallone's character with an adjective, because you don't really see him being unemotional. They say he is unemotional. You don't see it. You don't know if he's a good cop or a bad cop. The mother goes, I mean, she's also, every character is this.
She's a terror. They're all terrible people.
Everybody in this movie has like borderline personality disorder.
Yeah.
Like they genuinely do not seem to understand basic human interactions, empathy. Like nobody is in control of anything. Like it is, everyone is a stone cold disaster.
And no one genuinely likes each other.
No.
They all fucking hate each other.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
He
gives
the other guy a swirly.
Yes.
An adult man gives another adult man a swirly.
And
in
not
this
really
movie.
Even commented on after the fact.
I was like, if guys are going to fight who are cops, they're not going to give each other like swirlies.
No. That happens a lot in the precincts in LA.
Well,
that was the whole Rampart scandal.
Estelle says to him at some point that she wants to spank him.
No, she says that to the bad guy.
Yeah.
She says that to the bad guy. She's like, I'm going to pull your pants down
and
give you a spanking.
Oh, mom.
I mean, that's some sexy-ass shit right there.
Well, she knows a peen when she looks at it.
You can also cut a trailer for this movie, guys, that is a porno.
Yes, or is about Estelle and Sylvester.
It's like, cut a romantic comedy trailer.
A mom-com?
For an incest movie.
I love that.
For a sexy incest movie like Spanking the Monkey, but funny.
Obviously, we had opinions about this movie, but there are some people who have a larger, better opinion. These are reviews culled from Amazon, 5-star reviews. I'll read you, both of them could be a joke. I don't know, but they're both well written. I think they're worth reading. This one's from Timothy. Sylvester Stallone stars in another comedy. Why? I don't know, but it's a real comedy. His mom is the most annoying person in the world, and it reminded me of all my friends' moms. Reminisce. Stallone is a police officer, as usual, and his mom packs a wallop as well. What are the odds? And from the beginning credit of this picture showing you the old woman pulling out a revolver and shooting a stop sign, I knew this movie would never be forgotten. One diabolical moment showed Stallone in a diaper. Outrageous. I don't want to see that again. Universal needs to put this movie on DVD as soon as they can because mothers fighting against crime love it. And so do I.
Oh, my God.
So that could be real or fake.
I feel like that sounds
real.
And this one, this is another long one, but it's worth it. This is one of those movies panned by critics, but both endearing and of enduring value. chemistry, perfect casting for the comedic tension, poetic acting. The plot is a twist.
Poetic acting?
Yes.
Poetic acting.
The plot is a twisted, timeless cliche ignored and bemused by seriously real characters. Stallone, as the strapping adult son befuddled and arrested by his tiny mom, is hilarious. Estelle Getty puts it all together as a mom who variously is tenacious, quintessential, sympathetic, dejected, and sly. Jo Beth Williams excels in her role as a romantic interest in the comedic setup, but Estelle becomes our mom, the universal mom experience. Oh, and she busybodies her way into the impossible action-adventure situations and standard detective novel dysfunction romance. What makes this movie so great is its profound and uplifting humor created through a sum greater than its parts, a common fantasy story interrupted by an everyday mom. An omnibus, well played.
What?
Wow, what a beautiful writer.
Five stars by Wilhelm. That is a really
ludicrous poetic acting.
Quintessential,
profound, ominous. Oh man! So that is that. I will also tell you what Sylvester Stallone said.
Do it in a Stallone voice. Do it in a Stallone voice.
Maybe one of the worst films I've ever been in. Maybe one of the worst films in the entire solar system, including Alien Productions, which we've never seen. A flatworm could write a better script. And in some countries, China, I believe, running the movie once a week on a government television has lowered the birth rate to zero. If they ran it twice, it would be 20 years. China would be extinct.
Wait,
did
you say a worm could have written a better
script? A flatworm.
A flatworm could have written a better script.
Not just any worm.
A flatworm.
Wait a minute. By the way, that's fucking hilarious.
This is really funny.
But this is why I question why he did the movie, because he's one of those secret smart people.
Because
he wrote Rocky, right?
Like, yeah. And Rambo. And he's written everything that he's
written.
What was this? I know he probably wanted to do comedy. It's the early 90s. But the choices.
He was paying for steroids with this one. This is like paying off a house or a vacation thing.
It's so crazy.
Because it is so bad. But there are also three writers. So you feel like Blake Snyder was like, wrote the first draft. It might have been funnier. And they're like, we got to bring the Stallone guys too. And all three writers in there produced an 86-minute movie.
Which launched a bidding war, if I read. According to the Wikipedia page, there was a bidding war for this movie.
Oh, my gosh.
What?
I mean,
really?
Getty, cop movie, moms, it's gonna be great.
Holy shit. That's depressing.
Would you guys recommend seeing this movie to anyone?
I think it's, yes.
Yeah,
I would.
Sure, why not?
Sure.
I mean, it's terrible.
It's terrible, but it's watchable.
It's on Netflix.
It's watchable.
I did get a genuine laugh in this movie. One genuine laugh, and I was embarrassed to admit it, but there's a scene where he's like shaving or brushing his teeth, and they pull out to reveal that Estelle Getty is literally in front of him and like between the bathroom mirror and him.
Yeah.
Because she's so short, you could hide it. So she's like underneath him, like yelling at him. But I thought that was a funny
reveal. I think we're putting a lot on Sylvester. I actually really think the bigger problem was with her.
Wow. I've never heard anyone place the blame on Estelle.
I know.
It's controversial. Whoa.
I felt like she's doing something we've already seen her do on Golden Girls.
Uh-oh.
There was nothing different.
Dude, not pulling any punches, finally.
Taking on Estelle
Getty. Because she wasn't Italian. She was Bablowski?
Yeah.
Bablowski.
Right. Well,
different than a Sophia character.
I think that's why you can argue she never did another. I mean, she did two other movies, but they were very far in between.
So you wouldn't characterize her as a feminist icon?
Did you feel that she loved Sylvester?
Yes.
You did?
I genuinely felt like she wanted to fuck him.
Yeah, I felt
sexually.
Something
maybe she
very
trained
wrong.
Him to present. That's
you
why
know she
did
was
it.
The youngest of the Golden Girls.
Yeah.
And died
so
first.
So it's a crazy stat.
Life isn't fair.
No, it really isn't. Robbed us of, arguably one of my favorite of the Golden Girls.
Are you bitter that Betty White is still around?
Is that fucking cunt? Somebody needs to shut her down.
But not before she gets a couple more off the rockers in the can.
She's working way too much.
She's 90.
I love her too, but we've all got to calm down.
And is working.
Do you feel like she thinks if she stops working that that will be the end? I feel like she's like, I got to keep on going.
Yeah, it's the only thing keeping me alive.
She'll keel over the second she stops.
She's like, I got to go. I got to go.
I feel like she might die every night. And they reanimate her every morning, like in some sort of fucked up
thing.
Michael Jackson.
Weekend at Bernie's.
Yep.
Hey, anything to keep off their rockers on the air, which, go check it out. It's Please don't. It is Please don't really
it's
fun.
It's actually a good show.
It is. June.
I will say
June,
that
June, what are you talking about?
I was the one who,
June had the same
it.
Reaction, and I made her watch it, and because Rob Hubel told me, he's like, you got to watch Off Their Rockers. Like, I'm not watching
What
that.
Are you talking
no,
about?
You guys. We may have been a little stoned, but it was really good.
So you're watching Jack and Jill and Off Their Rockers at home?
Well, I saw Jack and Jill in the theaters.
And with that, we bid you adieu. Thank you, everybody, for listening. You can follow Kate Spencer on Twitter at Kate Spencer,
That's
right?
That's me, yeah.
That's very
thank
easy
Thank you
to
for
do.
Having me, guys.
Oh, my gosh, we're oh so excited God. To have you. You can follow me on Twitter at Paul Scheer.
At Miss June Diane.
Yeah, not on right. Twitter, guys. It's not happening.
Issue 2 of my comic book is out in the stores. Aliens vs. Parker. You can get it online. You can get it in stores. Thank you guys so much. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
This has been an Earwolf Media production. Executive producers Jeff Ulrich and Scott Aukerman. For more information, visit earwolf.com.
Earwolf Radio. Boom.com. The wolf dead.
Hey, everyone, it's Jessica St. Clair.
And Lennon Parham.
Hey, assholes, it's me, John Gabris.
Lauren Lapkus here.
We just wanted to talk about one of our favorite podcasts to be on and to listen to, Improv for Humans.
I'm a huge Improv for Humans fan. I've done a number of episodes myself. A couple great memories. One of them was when I got to argue about whether bestiality was disgusting or not.
A lot of times it's you, me, and Mandzukas and Besser, and it's really old school, and there's something about not being on stage in front of an audience that makes you even crazier than you would be.
If I can recommend an episode to check out or a favorite memory from the podcast, I would say listen to some of the 420 episodes, because those are the ones I like to re-listen to, because I truly don't remember what I said.
Another great episode I loved doing was the Dan Deacon episode. I love his music, and being able to sit like 1 foot away from him and watch him create amazing music was so cool.
That's what's cool, is he gets people on for suggestions, often singers, songwriters.
Really,
if you're a real fan of improv, even if you've never actually heard improv before, this is a great introduction. You can't get better improv comedians than who he has on his podcast.
Everyone needs to be listening to Improv for Humans. Come on!
New episodes every Thursday. Be sure to listen to wherever you get your podcasts. But I recommend Stitcher. They make me say that.